19th. Delivered Shelby was $5.03. The fixed price for the same day was only $3.91. The pool price is only $3.40. Red Spring on October 25th delivered Shelby. $4.87 for Dark Northern Spring Week. Fixed price contract was only $4.66. The pool is only $4.36. Even if you take since August, take the highest U.S. price and take the highest price the Weeport offered in the fixed price contract, there was still a 40-cent difference. The U.S. was higher. Take the lowest U.S. price, take the lowest fixed price, and it was, again, 40 cents. So we've been getting 40 cents discount less to U.S. prices. And you can remember U.S. prices is a world price. It's not the U.S. price. That's just backed off to a U.S. elevator. So we hear all this talk of groups supporting the monopoly, talking about premiums. $645 million is one number. $800 million is another number. Well, let's just do the math on that. Weeport last year sold 16 million bushels of grain. $645 million premium, that means that's $40 a ton. That's $1.10 a bushel premium they got for a grain. $800 million, that's $1.36 a bushel premium. I don't see where those numbers are coming from. Where they're selling grain for 40 cent discount. And most of what they claim in that premium, tendering, managing delivery system, blending, farmer access to producer cars, that has nothing to do with the Weeport. Any company can get those. So if they're getting these premiums, why are people selling winter wheat? People are getting out of their select winter wheat programs to sell for feed. Malt barley should be the highest prices that we've ever seen. There's no malt barley in the world. $5-6 a bushel. What are people doing? They're getting out of their contracts, selling it for feed. Obviously, the Weeport's not doing their job. There was a Coors offered Weeport a contract for $4 a bushel last year, and they said no to it. Now Montana farmers are hauling that grain to Calgary for $4 a bushel. I know that's unacceptable. And Ian McCreary and Dwayne Anderson, both directors in the Weeport, they're opposite ends of the spectrum. One's far left, one far right, if you want to use those terms. They both agree that they cannot measure the performance of the Weeport. So, something to think about. Now, how I see my new pricing options working. We need the pricing options to be separated from the pool. This way, you can sell your grain throughout the year, right till July 31st, any given day. It'll be separate from the pool. There'll be no adjustment factors. And you'll be able to get full market value. The basis levels are a little more complicated, something you have to work on. We know what they are on the PNW, Pacific Northwest. We can easily give that to farmers. And with all this talk about going to an open market, how am I going to sell my wheat? Well, let's just go through the different options the Weeport offers. Daily price, basis contracts, fixed price contracts with adjustment factors. Exchange for physicals. You have a broker, you buy the grain with your broker, you sell it, you give it to their broker. Producer direct sale, guaranteed delivery contract and the pool. If you can understand those seven contracts, I mean, marketing an open system would be a breeze. If you were to phone the call center and ask them about these programs and ask three or four different people, 15 minutes apart, you'll get three or four different answers. They don't understand the programs. You know, the daily price contract, you could have kept your grain over from last year and put it into a daily price contract this year. It would have made $50 a ton difference from last year. But the Weeper said you weren't allowed to do that. Until someone told me that they were wrong and we challenged them on it, and yeah, sure enough, you could. I know guys that had about 10,000 ton of wheat they could have pushed onto that contract. So, it's not right. Now, in 2004-05, there was a $35 million premium, $35 million surplus in the fixed price programs. What did they do? They used $25 million or $28 million and topped up the contingency fund, which was maxed out at $50 million, which I understand because the pool, you're not allowed to take any money from the pool and top up producer pricing options, which is understandable. What they did, though, is there's $7.5 million extra out of that program. They put it into the pool, that $7.5 million. Now, you got to remember, when you're in the fixed price contracts and the producer pricing options, you're out of the pool. All your tons are out of the pool. So, essentially, they are stealing, I'm going to use that strong word, stealing your money, your risk, and giving it to the pool when those people have nothing to do with that hedging. Now it's maxed out. There was 1.1 million tons in 2004-05. In 2005-06, there's 3.5 million tons. So we've got 2 years yet. We don't know what the numbers are, but what are those surpluses? Where is that money going? I'm sure it's being used artificially to increase the pool prices. Accountability, another big thing. Who's accountable at the weed board? Who's making decisions on behalf of your farms? Is their performance even being judged? In 2002, the pro started off at $330 a ton. We ended up at $250 a ton and they had an $85 million deficit. That was a billion-dollar loss to farmers. 2004, when the frost hit. The wheat board, when the frost hit in Saskatchewan, the wheat board stopped selling grain. They were out of the market because they wanted to figure out what they had and they wanted to keep grain for their best customers. Well, the futures skyrocketed, and by the time the wheat board got back in, the futures were back down. Hedging in the Canadian dollar in from 2002 and on, you know, there was all these losses in the pool account to the U.S. or the Canadian dollar going up. You know, on a year-to-year basis, they need to be hedging. You know, was anybody fired or held accountable for any of these things? I don't think so. And just imagine, you can see the chart here, in 96, if we had producer pricing options, the futures hit $7 on a $1.50 U.S. exchange rate. You should have been seeing anywhere from $10 to $12 a bushel in 96, 97. What were you seeing, maybe 6 or 7? What does that cost you? Scare tactics out there. We'll flood markets. Big multinationals will emerge and drive prices down. When trucks show up at the border, they're going to slam the border shut. First of all, we export twice as many dollars of canola products as we do wheat. There's no trade action. We export a million tons of oats. There's no trade action. The only trade action the U.S. takes is on wheat board grains because they feel that they undercut the market. They buy at initial price and they can go sell for whatever they want. They're not going to have, there's going to be no trade action. It hasn't been on any other products. The wheat board has a monopoly, and it sounds good, but they have a monopoly on buying grain, which is bad for farmers. They don't have the monopoly in selling grain in the world market. They're only 18% market share, and that's declining every year. So don't think that a monopoly is good, because it's actually bad for farmers, because you only have one place to sell. They have no reason to give good performance. So basically, I'm running short here, so we need change. There was all this sky is going to fall when oats was going to come off, when feed grains was going to come off, when interprovincial boundaries were going to come off the wheat board. Let's just look at those. Feed grains come off. What built the cattle industry here since then? Highest priced market in the world for barley is in Lethbridge on average. Oats. In 1989, when the wheat board sold oats, it was 150,000 tons they sold. Now in Saskatchewan, they grow 2 million tons alone. Obviously, it's more successful. So, we have, Chuck Strahl said we have till 07, 08 before there's going to be any change, regardless. So we have a year and a half. We don't need a current board of directors who's going to stick their hand in the sand and say no change. There's been no change in 75 years. There's been some producer pricing options over the last 8, but still, in 8 years, it's as far as we've come. And we need more change. If we're going to go in an open market, the wheat board will never survive the way it's a dinosaur. We need change. And a vote for me is a vote for that change.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Con Johnson. I'm from Bracken, Saskatchewan. If you've never heard of Bracken, it's understandable. There's 27 of us that live there. We met a backhoe loaded on a truck, so maybe there's only 26, and I want to get one. My wife, Faye, and I, we farm 9,000 acres. We grow a variety of crops. We've tried just about all of them. Why I'm running, I want market choice. I think it's time to get some diversity out there. I want more accountability. I think we could be far more efficient with our board. And I want to put primary producers back on top the list. Instead of worrying about saving a system, I want to worry about saving the farms. And I want to protect the right to load producer cars, which is a very big issue in our, our area. I was a mind my own business stay-at-home farmer until 1992. And then if you all remember, we had a prairie-wide frost. Because of our KVD grading system, all our grain was grading feed, but in actuality it was some of it, a lot of it, was very good milling wheat. The CWB was Sask Wheat Pool as their accredited exporter, moved over 6 million bushels of that into the U.S. market and sold it as feed. That one sale cost our farm $250,000. Since that time, I've worked hard for change and accountability. I finally decided to run for the CWB Board of Directors now, though, as we have a government that seems like it wants change, our industry's in crisis, and all the core current directors seem to want to do is fight hard to maintain the status quo. Primary producers seem to be lost in the shuffle. We're the drivers of this industry, and we have to be put back on the top of that list. Recent speeches by Adrian Meisner, the CEO of the Canadian Wheat Board, to Chamber of Commerce's in Manitoba, tell them they should worry about losing up to 400 jobs in Winnipeg if there's changes to the board. No mention of the thousands of farmers he's supposed to be working for. There can be no rationale that connects maintaining a monopoly to preserving jobs in Winnipeg. The role of the CWB is supposed to be servant to the growers, not master. Its role is to sell our grain at the highest price and not use that price to sustain employment in Winnipeg. Why are we resisting change, and who's driving this resistance? Well, it's a group of directors that are resisting all change. They have strong NFU and NDP ties. The board of directors spent over $1 million developing harvesting opportunities. That's a study that shows their view of what the CWB should look like in the future. They were clearly told by Ag Minister Strahl not to release that report without the same consultants doing a study for a voluntary board environment. They refused to spend $1 on the other side of the debate, and they released harvesting opportunities anyway. They clearly laid down the message there will be no change to the monopoly. There's numerous models to show that the CWB can exist without bricks and mortar. It can exist with choice, and actually can become stronger if farmers choose to deliver to it, not because they're legislated to. Who develops this policy and statement surrounding the idea the CWB can't exist without their monopoly? Well, it's not some divine mystic figure that lives in a cave in a mountain somewhere. It's just the opinion of people that don't want change. We recently saw flyers come around from the National Farmers Union that spread all sorts of boogeyman stories. Steve alluded to one of them. It says they put $800 million in our pockets every year. If you break that down, in the year 2005, they marketed 589 million bushels of grain. Well, divide that into 800, and that's $1.36 a bushel. If you go back and look at your grain tickets, we were actually under the world price. So how can they claim that we got $1.36 above that? The math doesn't work. They also claim without current CWB, our freight rates would rise to North Dakota levels, double our values. Well, I know what the rates are in Montana, and after checking, the highest unit train rate you can get in North Dakota right now, that's cheaper than the rate I pay out of Bracken. They've used single car rates to skew the facts. You can't even get single car spots on BNSF anymore. It's just another story. The monopoly does extract premiums from two markets, Japan and the United Kingdom. Those premiums are dropping every year. And as the fixed cost of being locked into this system rise, those premiums are quickly eaten up. Elevation charges in Harlem, Montana, the point closest to me, are 5 cents a bushel, and there's no cleaning charges. Here, elevation and cleaning charges are over 45 cents a bushel. That's 40 cents per bushel of our grain are eaten up right there. No, the CWB doesn't set those costs, but the monopoly keeps us captive to them. Why do we need change? Well, in 2006 Wheat Board Annual Producers Survey, 47% of the farmers questioned wanted a choice on how they market their wheat, and 7% wanted the CWB completely out of wheat marketing. 54% of wheat producers want a change. In barley, the numbers were even greater. 65% of barley producers want change. When half or more of the people you represent want change and you ignore their wishes, are you really doing your job? So who is speaking for half the farmers in Western Canada? Is it democratic for our present directors of the CWB to totally ignore the wishes of well over half the farmers they're supposed to be representing? And we have to move to harmonize grain marketing regulations across Canada. Farmers in Ontario, they've had marketing choice since 2003. This past year, they had record acres and record production. The Ontario Board handled a third of the crop in 2005. And while it's not perfect, no one is calling for the return of the single desk there. Farmers are taking advantage of all the new opportunities available to them, either on their own or through the Ontario Wheat Board. Our focus on exporting raw products has to change. Less than 5% of prairie wheat is processed on the prairies, compared to almost 50% for canola. We're the world's biggest producer of durum, yet where are the processing plants? They're in North Dakota. They're in Montana. We'll never attract those industries until farmers can contract production directly with these companies. The pro-monopoly supporters also claim that we have to retain the monopoly to defend us against U.S. trade actions. Well, that's been referred to as putting a pyromaniac in charge of fire prevention. I'm convinced that if the monopoly was gone, the threat of trade actions would decrease dramatically. We've had no trade action against other grains or oilseeds. And what was the cost to wheat producers of being shut out of that market for almost 3 years? We've got to change so there's some internal competition for our grain. If the private trade and the CWB competed for a product, farm gate prices would reflect current world prices more closely. The return under the CWB's fixed price contracts is currently well below values being offered at U.S. elevators. This was 2 weeks ago. For spring wheat, the difference was 50 cents. Durum, 70 cents, and on winter wheat, the price difference is more than a dollar lower here. But don't take my word for it. Go check it out yourself. Take samples down and see what they're paying. Then ask yourself, if U.S. farmers don't have the advantage of the single desk, why are their prices higher? And don't blame subsidies either. They haven't used the export enhancement program for years, and their internal subsidies tend to increase production, which lowers prices. The world focus on food seems to be going towards safety. We hear about branding products, IP'd identity preserved products, and marrying small mills in the Pacific Rim to individual farms. One of my other jobs, I'm chairman of the board of Great Western Railway. That's a short line that consists of 306 miles of track. It used to be the east end of the line that ran through Minnieberries and to Sterling. Producers, towns, and rural municipalities banded together, and we bought that line 3 years ago. We have 34 loading sites along this line, and we load approximately 4,200 producer cars a year. For those of you that aren't familiar, producer cars is where a farmer loads his own grain into his own car. There are roughly 12,000 producer cars loaded in Canada each year. This gives the Canadian Wheat Board 36 million bushels of totally identity-preserved grain to market. How much extra do these 36 million bushels of grain get from our current marketer? Not one red cent. They're all hauled to the coast and dumped in the ships with thousands of other producers' grain. While most of the current directors seem focused on status quo, what type of marketer would totally disregard 36 million bushels of IP grain? I'm also involved with a cleaning plant in Bracken where our main business is cleaning yellow field peas. We're able to gain an extra 20 cents a bushel in producers' pockets above market price because we branded quality products with our plant. Think of what this CWB should be doing with that 36 million bushels. It's the safest, most traceable quality grain in the world. And yet we don't get one extra cent from the marketplace. I think it would be a glorious opportunity for the new CWB to partner with the short lines and the inland terminals to become their marketing arm. It would give the CWB a constant and sure supply of grain, and it would give the short lines and the inland terminals the marketing expertise. How do we change? Well, Minister Strahl struck a task force of industry experts to come up with a paper that shows the way for change and to guide the CWB into a market choice environment. While the CWB was invited to put someone on that task force, they declined. They did participate in information sessions. As soon as that report was released, the CWB issued a response that just totally trashed the report. They gave no constructive criticism, just the same old tired reasons why nothing can work. Play the game my way, or I'm going to take my ball and go home. What's going to happen to our industry if we have a board of directors that won't even talk about change and then ridicule people who put forward ideas on how to move this thing forward? This report's too lengthy to go into here today, but please get a copy. Go through it and make up your own minds. It's found on the Ag Canada website. And if you have questions about it, call the people that wrote it. They're very open people. They'll talk to you. Who will sell our grain in the new CWB? Well, I always tell people the same companies that are selling it now. Well, we'll probably never know for sure. We're told that about 40% of all our export sales are done by accredited exporters and not the CWB. If they're doing almost half now, why are we worried about who's going to sell our grain? I guess the question I had about this, why do we need the monopoly to sell half our grain? That essentially doubles the administration costs that we pay, and I think it bears the fact this bureaucracy has got to be trimmed down, and it's got to become more cost-effective and efficient. How can we make more money without the monopoly? Well, while pricing options at the CWB have become more numerous and seemingly popular, are programs like EPOs really popular, or do producers simply need cash flow? There was a 600% increase in usage on the fixed price and basis contracts. I think that clearly indicates that farmers can handle marketing diversity, and it shows a large number of producers aren't satisfied with the pool. We don't have to reinvent the wheel, though, trying to give the farmers all these programs that they're already available in the private sector. Things like simple production contracts would be a great marketing tool for us with the CWB. You could lock in a price of your grain up to 12 months before harvest. The CWB covers the risk. The farmers would have security of price. The CWB has the security of product. And as farmers in the U.S. were able to do when you get spikes like that in 95 and 6, they can use those simple contracts and sell two crops essentially in the top of the market within that 3 or 4 month period. Lost opportunities with barley production contracts, durum contracts, they've cost us millions in the last few years, and for the benefit of who? Where in all the studies that show monopoly benefits does it show the carrying cost of grain that we as farmers have to absorb? What's been the cost of carrying durum over for the last 2 years? How many hundreds of thousands of bushels have gone out of condition or been infected with bugs while we wait for contract calls? One size doesn't fit all when it comes to grain marketing or most anything else. If the CWB works for your farm, that's fine. Then use it. But that doesn't give you the right to tell your neighbor he must use it too. No one knows your operation better than you do. And you're the one that should be deciding how and when to market your crop. We don't decide how to collectively do anything else on each other's farm. So why should we think we all have to decide on how we market our wheat and barley? We don't need someone for the pro-monopoly side saying, trust me, we know what's best for you. As individual farmers, we'll decide what's best for individual farms. You can't change things by keeping them the same, and you can't make things better if you don't change. Thank you for your time, and in closing, please vote. And with a preferential ballot, if you're in favor of change, vote for myself and Stephen. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Good evening, everyone. I farm just east of Swift Current. My wife and I have about a 5,000-acre farm there, and we farm just over 4,300 of it ourselves, and we rent the rest of it to someone else. My position on the CWB is I support the single desk with marketing options, and I think that the CWB belongs to farmers. It's our decision to take that and operate it to our advantage or to get rid of it. To me, voluntary CWB, marketing choice, or dual market all mean open market. And this was confirmed by the recent marketing choice task force that Con referred to. Niche markets, IP production, specific traits, or specific quality can all provide premiums to producers, and producers can capture those premiums within the single desk. The pricing options allow producers to capture market premiums or to price their grain according to their view of the market, and development can continue on those. Producers have a clear decision in this election to move to the open market or have a single desk. One thing that I think is important to recognize it is that if we dismantle the single desk, that decision is irreversible. And this will cost Canadians at the WTO. In other words, we will disarm before the battle. And I'll mention a bit more about that later. Farmers would be going against business trends. The power will shift to railways and away from producers. The railways will tender 100% of the cars. And instead of producers using their permit book and the car supply in there to negotiate with the grain companies, the elevators will buy the cars from the railways and then sell them to farmers. And I do believe the producer cars will likely be lost. Con mentioned that you cannot get a single car spot with BNSF. I think he's right. That will happen here. And there will also be unforeseen consequences as the industry reacts to the shift in power. We don't know what will happen. And also, we don't know what will happen with the single desk in terms of what we could use it for in the future, because there will be things in the future that we don't know about today. I'm just going to paraphrase a couple of presentations that were made by a couple of individuals about the business climate. And it's roughly, to survive in today's business climate, size matters. Use strategic alliances, joint ventures, mergers, or coordination so as not to compete with each other. And this was by Dr. David Bell of Harvard School of Business, and another small businessman named Bill Gates gave this piece of advice. And they were talking to farm business leaders. And to me, farming is a business, and they were talking to us. In the industry, mergers and acquisitions are going to happen. Railways, grain companies, and millers will all be getting together. An example is that Robin Hood Mills was sold to Smucker's Foods, and then it was sold to Cargill. So now, if you want to get grain into Robin Hood in Saskatoon, you take your grain to Cargill. In Lethbridge, the Borden Catelli plant was sold to New World Pasta. They closed the plant here. And then Ebro Polvea, a Spanish food company, bought New World Pasta. New World also closed a couple of other pasta plants in the North American market. And Ebro closed another one. And these businesses are joined to obtain more market power. I think that to compete in the future, farmers will make more money working within the single desk. This is the strategic alliance for farmers. We certainly need to develop options within that to allow producers to have the ability to make individual pricing decisions. I disagree with Steve in terms of being able to deliver our grain in 1 month. I don't think that's possible. I think that we can price our grain when we want to, but our system has to run at capacity 12 months of the year to move our grain out, and it's not going to be possible to move a large block of grain out of that. One option where no option is needed, just to answer a statement made here, any malt house that's registered in a primary elevator can sign a contract with a producer to deliver that barley at any price. If a malt house wants to pay you $5 a bushel for your barley to buy it away from the feed industry, they're free to do it. No problems, no complications. I mentioned the WTO. The Doha round will restart probably when a new U.S. administration is in place in 2008. And success to U.S. trade negotiator is to get what they want while giving up nothing. And a good example of this is a framework text that Robert Zoellick negotiated where the CWB gave up government guarantees and the U.S. gave up virtually nothing. I recall a presentation where Dan Glickman, who was a former U.S. Secretary of Agriculture, was asked, and this was right around the time of the last farm bill that we've all come to love so well, especially if you're a lentil pea producer. Wouldn't it be a good thing for the U.S. to show good faith and reduce farm support? And his answer was, without batting an eye, trade negotiations are war. The U.S. will not disarm before a battle. If we voluntarily give up the single desk now, we would be disarming before the battle. The U.S. and the EU will take that, and they will move on. Trade with the U.S., just a few facts about that. The U.S. is the world's largest exporter of wheat. They're not an exporter of oats. They're not an exporter of canola. They're net importers. So that situation is completely different. American farmers believe that Canadian grain exported to the U.S. lowers their prices. And if we think about what's happening with U.S. corn coming into the barley area around Lethbridge in the past few years, I think we'd probably agree with that. I think we can export around 10% of our wheat crop to the U.S., providing we accept some disciplines around that. The way the CWB has won the trade challenges that the U.S. has launched is not by having unsold the market, as was previously mentioned. If the CWB had ever undersold, and the U.S. had ever found that, there would be no Canadian grain moving across the border right now. If a large number of Canadian grain sales are made to elevators in the northern U.S., American farmers will complain to the USTR. And if the claim is made against individual farmers, those farmers will have to defend the case. That's how U.S. trade law is. And with no defense, because of the extreme high cost of this trade action defense, the border would be closed, I think, permanently. Speaking of not undercutting, I want to quote you a little piece from the U.S. International Trade Commission website. They did a study on virtually all of the U.S. sales into the American milling market, and they got all the prices from the buyers, and they studied 60 months. And out of those 60 months, the CWB selling price was higher than the U.S. sellers on 59 of them. And the CWB delivered closer to the contract specs. Market discipline. Here's a few facts about durum. Con mentioned all the durum that was carried over. Currently, we sell about 10% of our durum to the U.S. They mill about 2.4 million metric tons. We delivered about 300,000 to 400,000 tons. Canada sold 4.3 in 05-06 to all buyers. Canada had 7.5 million tons. The total world trade in durum is 7.3. We had more durum than the entire world trade of durum in that year. So what do you think would have happened if we tried to force that all in the marketplace? You know, I just think we would have collapsed the price. U.S. farmers would have been right. We would have damaged their market, and there would be a closing action on trade. I just want to say one little thing about hedging gains here. I wasn't going to do this, but when you're called a thief or at least complicit to theft, it kind of ticks at you a little bit. So Stephen mentioned hedging gains. He's absolutely right about the numbers. When the options were taken out to manage the risk around those pricing options, they were at a cost. And the CWB cannot make a perfect hedge on these things, so there can be pluses and minuses, gains or losses when they're unwound. But here's the bottom line. Producers got what they bargained for. If you did a fixed price contract that you signed up for, you got it. If you did a basis contract that you signed up for, you got it. And the hedging gains could have been hedging losses had the market gone the other way when they were unwound. That could have happened. And that's what the contingency fund is designed for, is to protect the risk of things going either way. Now, with the surplus in money, the cap on the contingency fund went to $50 million. Our option was to ask the government to raise it so all the money could go into the fund. That would have been the right thing to do, because the $50 million is not enough money for the size of the pricing options now. As it turned out, the government refused. We couldn't get the cap raised, so we had no choice at that time, because our auditor wanted to have the matching principle of generally accepted accounting practices met. So $7.5 million was put into the pool account. That was not theft. it was just the way things were. So to sum up, I want to say that the single desk belongs to farmers. We can operate it in a way that meets producers' needs. I dispute the notion that change hasn't occurred. I think a lot of change has occurred, and it will continue. The elimination of the single desk cannot be reversed. The only sustainable way to access U.S. prices is to accept discipline that the single desk provides and use pricing options. Giving up the single desk now will cost Canada later, when the WTO negotiations resume, and any decision to the mandate of the CWB belongs to farmers. Thank you.
I'd like to ask a question of all three, assuming that a number of elected directors or re-elected directors will be pro-choice. I would like to know how they will address that. How will they make, what changes do they see? How will they support changes? And I'd like to ask that of Larry Hill first, please.
The current balance on the board of directors is in favor of the single desk, and you're suggesting that balance would change?
Not necessarily, but if it does, how can you, what would you see the direction that you could help take the board?
I think that having people with difference of opinions on the board of directors is a good thing. If all you listen to is people that agree with you, mm-hmm. you never make any headway. So having people that have different points of view, I think, is very useful. And I think that you have to work with these people, no matter whether they're on my side of the issue or not. We have to listen to everyone. We have to debate the subject and make the best decision for producers. That's where we're going to have to go.
Thank you. And could I please have, is it Conrad? I'm sorry, I forget your last name. But I remember Bracken.
You wouldn't if you were ever there.
I might have passed through. I'm not sure.
I guess I agree with Larry. It's good to have people with different opinions. I know with the experience I've had with Great West Rail and some of the other things we've done, I'm not one of those people that like to say, well, it's got to be done this way or that way. There's always middle ground. We took that approach with CP Rail, who's our partner on the short line.
Okay.
And we actually, the first meeting I had with them, they sat down and they had their lawyer and their pencils, and they wondered what the problem was. And I just said, well, there is no problem. I just wanted to get to know you. And we've had, a dozen meetings like that with them since. And they're letting us things do as a short line that no other short lines do. And I think it's just because we work things out. There's things they can do and they can't do. There's things we can do and we can't do. And there's two sides to everything. So I think just work together, get along, find middle ground, and go forward.
Thank you. And Stephen?
If I understand the question correctly, what change would we want to bring to the board?
Yes.
I give you the first thing I would do if I was elected would be to get free export permits for farmers. So if wherever they choose to sell to, they can do that without a cost. Second would be accountability, just having a look, trying to open the books. I know we're not allowed. Crown Corporation, I can't quite see why. Third would be producer pricing options. We need, if we do stay in a single desk system, that will change how those have to be run. Like I said before, we need to have them separated from the pool so we don't have this fun adjustment factor that we all love on the fixed price contracts and all those fun things. But we need to be able to price our grain all the way through the year and not 3 months. We're done already. October 31st, we're finished pricing our grain or ourselves. We need to be able to do that right till July 31st. And delivery needs to be, something needs to be done about delivery periods.
I have two questions. Well, actually, I have a question to Mr. Johnson and Mr. Vanderwalk, and then I have to make a comment, and I'd like all three to respond to my comment. But the first question is specific to Mr. Johnson and Mr. Vanderwalk. In your presentations, you spoke mostly about marketing, grain and how it should be improved and so on and so forth. But if you really know the CWB, it's more about marketing grain. You did not touch on railcar allocations, tendering systems, how that benefits the farmer, producer cars, how that benefits the farmer, how defending trade actions benefits the farmer, how many other things such as that is benefiting the farmer. The CWB is not just a grain marketer, and I'd wish the two of you would make some comments in those two areas that I just mentioned. And then CWB is also about change. And I'm going to put a comment here and propose, and I'd like direction from all three. Or do you want to do those two first?
Can we have a reply to the first two questions? You can just stay there for your comment. I don't have my sheet, but tendering, I can answer that. Weport used to tender 50% of the cars out. There was some trouble there because some of the smaller elevators couldn't compete, so they changed that to 25%. There's a $20 a ton incentive on 100-car rail spots versus single cars. So 25% loss in tendering represents 4 or 5 million tons of grain times $20. So $80 to $100 million loss. Producer cars, written in legislation, has nothing to do with the wheat board. You're going to get your producer cars, and probably, in fact, you'll probably get it with better service without the wheat board poking the eye of CP and CN every day. And trade actions, I talked about that before. There's no trade actions on any other commodity except for wheat board grains.
That's misinformed. Just ask the sugar industry, cattle industry, lumber industry.
Not grains, though. Not canola, and it gets back to the canola thing. The U.S. is the largest exporter of soybeans, and yet they have no troubles with all our canola products and canola going into the U.S. So, I mean, the examples are there. We can't compare it to cattle. Cattle, the U.S. is 80% of the cattle market. We're 10%. We only ship 10% of our grains there. It's not comparable.
Well, again, I'll talk about producer cars. Great West, they're entrenched in the Canada Grain Act. They have absolutely nothing to do with the CWB as far as getting cars. Great West Rail, we're the largest producer car shipper in Canada. I spent how much of my life they getting that railroad bought and running. I'm not doing anything that would jeopardize that in one little bit. If you look at the task force that the government just did as far as moving this industry forward, one of the authors of that task force is Paul Orsak. Paul loaded producer, he was the first person probably to put cereal grains in a producer car. He fought way back in the 70s for the right to load them. He actually had to fight to do it back when they weren't popular. I called him and asked him about it, and he said that's just all it is fear. He said they're entrenched in the Canada Grain Act, and they're always going to be there. It'll just be more. We don't only ship this producer cars off our line. Like I said before, we do the LOPs. We get all the cars we want. We have no trouble there. And as far as defending us against U.S. trade actions, I guess I said before, it's been referred to many times. It's like putting a pyromaniac in charge of fire prevention. We don't have trade actions with other grains. So why are we worried about it? If they weren't there, there wouldn't be the trade actions to defend us against.
Okay, thank you. And I'll make a comment, and I'd like all three to reply. I believe that the CWB has to change and evolve and keep forward. I am a person of belief that individual farmers can add value better to their grains than any institution, company, or whatever. My proposal is for thinking to the three potential candidates here. What would your thoughts on the Canadian Wheat Board giving up their monopoly for domestic industry, for the internal industry, in exchange for the Canadian Wheat Board to market all grains, oilseeds, lentils, and pulses in Canada? You understand what I'm saying? I'd like to know what the position is of all three of you on that comment. Does everybody understand the comment and question?
Could you be more clear? Could you make it a very clear question, please?
Okay. What would your position or is on the Canadian Wheat Board giving up their monopoly on domestic sales in exchange for the Canadian wheat board to market grains within Canada as a dealer or a grain company, but also have the right to market canola, oils, other oil seeds, and pulses, legumes, in exchange for giving up the domestic monopoly.
Is that all the domestic market you're talking about?
All the domestic market.
Okay. There are certain issues with the domestic market and giving up the single desk that I would be concerned about, but the CWB could certainly add value if it was at the port. There's no doubt about that in my mind. The CWB could market pulses and other crops right now. In fact, there were canola growers in Manitoba that asked the CWB to market canola. There are pulse producers that have asked the CWB to look at marketing pulses. The dilemma is, how do you add value to a greater extent than what any other trader or broker can do? And that's the thing that I struggle with. What the single desk does is you can brand the product and there's only one seller in the market. If there are several sellers in the market, the person that gets the tender is the one that bids the lowest price. And whether or not the CWB would be able to negotiate with the rest of the industry to steal some of that business away from them, I'm not sure. But there's no question about it, the CWB could handle it. Whether or not it would be a good deal, I don't know if it would be a good deal or not. I'd have to give a lot of thought to that.
But the export market, they would still just have...
They would still retain their monopoly on the export. I think they're just giving up the internal monopoly that they have.
What I was trying to get at, they would have a monopoly on wheat and barley export, not on everything. Just wheat and barley. Well, like I said before, there's always middle ground. It would be interesting. That's been proposed before, to have CWB handle all grains if people deliver to it voluntarily. Whether it was just inside Canada, I don't know. What value that they could add to it, but it would be a starting point. But I think I am a market choice candidate, and I think the people I represent and what I personally believe, there should be, we grow the grain, it's our grain, and we should be able to sell it whenever and wherever we want, to whomever we want. And I guess that's, whether that's a starting point, we go from there, but where I'm going to end up, it's choice. And if they wanted to market the other grains and people deliver to them voluntarily, that'd be fine with me, as long as it was voluntary.
I agree with Con. Why not open it up for everything? The wheat board can sell anything it chooses, either domestically grown or internationally grown, and can sell whatever it chooses. The problem with, and Larry even said it once, is that the number one priority of the wheat board is to supply Canadian users. What this does is it guarantees them supply. And you need fear to drive prices up. Well, they're a guaranteed supply. So that, we need to open that up so, these buyers, domestic buyers, need to compete for that grain. And just open, like you said, that's my platform, an open market. And they should be able to say, if they want it in an open market, they can sell peas, lentils, any commodity they want, whether it's U.S. grown, Australian grown, anything.
Before you ask the question.
Brian Otto, farmer at Warner, Alberta. My question is for all three candidates. Being a winter wheat grower and watching the breeding program that's going on here in Lethbridge, I realize the influence that KVD has on the ability of our researcher, our breeder, to get his varieties through his plant program and getting them licensed. And KVD is standing directly in the way of him being able to license varieties that he has at his station right now. And the problem being is that he has to use If everybody understands, the breeding program in Lethbridge is a high milling quality type winter wheat. He's using spring wheat material to build the quality into the program. And with KVD, what's happening is that 80% of what he's got in his plots has to be thrown out because he can't get the distinguishability. My point is, why are we keeping these excellent milling quality type varieties out of the system with an obsolete KVD system? And if anybody's wondering, KVD is kernel visual distinction, and it has to be visually distinctive from the hard red springs. And the spring wheat market is a diminishing market for us. There's a lot more world emphasis on the lesser milling quality wheats, and I think we've got a real problem. I want to know where these three candidates stand on that.
My personal feeling is the Grain Commission really has probably lost us five, maybe tenfold with the wheat boards lost us in by downgrading our grain. I mean, you take your sample of frozen or number four wheat or durum across the line, and it's number one. Never mind that they give you a higher price, they give you a number one grade for it. They don't care what it looks like. In our system, they're essentially racist, right? I mean, they just looked at, that's the way it is. They just look at, oh, it doesn't look very good, so we're not going to give you good money for it. And that's not the way we need to go. We need to have, and we don't need a cranky guy at the elevator who's been looking at samples all day. You know, one sample is good, the next sample isn't. It's all, there's no rhyme or reason to it. We need a system, which how they do it on the coast, they buy your grain by the way it looks, essentially, and they sell it on the West Coast to falling number. So all the grain sold, except for there's some Japanese, some guys who want color. There's a little premium there, but we need falling numbers. I think we're going there. I'm not sure which, if it's, you might help me, but in 07, 08 year, I think we're going, KVD is going to be gone, except for, I've looked into it, but it's changing. So we need KVD, we need those varieties, we need, like, especially with the ethanol and the biodiesel plants. We need high-yielding, low-quality varieties. You need 80, 100 bushel, an acre varieties of canola. And we need, you know, we need to compete with on bushels per acre with winter wheat. There's way higher yielding in varieties in the States, and we need to have access to them, especially since we're not worried about quality as much anymore when we're going to these ethanol plants. So that's a huge disadvantage for us.
I think we would need to do a cost-benefit analysis on how we protect the grain that's exported outside of Canada. I'm concerned that going head-to-head with the world on low-quality production might not be a winner for us, but we need to look at it. When it comes to KVD on ethanol, we did have a proposal that suggested there'd be a mixed kernel to get around the development problems right away. That was the wheat board's suggestion to the CGC, and they ignored that. Like I do think that if there was a mixed grain, we could have high production ethanol grains right away. I don't see that there's any issue here with the CWB. The CWB is not involved in grain that's going to ethanol in any way. So as long as it's not for human consumption, if it's for biofuels, there's no problem. Now, what is the system going to do? We, as directors, our position is that there would have to be equipment in the country to move away from KVD. And this means a major investment for the grain handling companies. And they've been kind of backpedaling on that to some extent. But I think KVD in the long run will be displaced by intrinsic value. And that's how we're going to have to sell our grain, is what the milling value or the value to ethanol production for starch, that is where we're going to go.
Well, I'm totally unbiased on KVD. I think it's a job creation project at the best. We're continually selling apples into Orange Market. We use a KVD system. Sell it into the U.S. or around the world that uses an intrinsic value system. A lot of the problems with the trade challenges with the frozen wheat in 92, it was all because of our grading system. It's a crazy system. I was recently representing Great West Rail in front of the Standing Committee in Ottawa on KVD. We heard testimony there, low estimates of $20 million a year to a high of $200 million a year that system costs us as farmers. There was one individual that even said $1 billion a year. Dr. Brian Fowler, who's probably the leading plant breeder in Canada, or was, he gets more royalties from his wheats in the U.S. now because they don't follow in KVD here. It takes 15 years when a niche market becomes available to get a grain there. He says, how many niche markets are there 15 years later? He's got winter wheat on the shelf. It'll yield dryland winter wheat, 100 bushels an acre. He can't get it developed because of KVD. And he said the silly thing about it is you're supposed to be able to look at it and see. And he said half our winter wheat you can put in with spring wheat and nobody can tell the difference. If you deliver different varieties of spring wheat to an elevator company, how do they know what it is? The only way they can tell is if you tell them what it is. They don't know what it is. It's just an obsolete system. As far as the technology is already here. Geez, they've had it. Falling number technology in the U.S. They had it back in 92 when we took that grain down. DuPont has black box technology now that it's an imaging process. You pour it in and it'll tell you what it is and it doesn't give you the actual falling numbers, but it gives you a very definite range. And as far as the grain companies pulling back as far as pulling enough to buy these things, well, as a farmer, who cares? If they had to compete for my grain, they'd damn well have that machine. And if one had it and got all the grain, then the other ones would too. I don't care if it costs the grain companies a bunch of money. They've made money off me for years on this KVD system. It's costing us a fortune. It's a job creation project, and that's all it is.
Alec Russell, producer, south of Lethbridge. I've got a couple of points, probably mostly for Larry. I'm thinking back to 02, the contingency on people that contracted was returned to the producers even though they could not fund their commitment with their quality wheat after it was froze. The board made a point at that time to return the profits made on the contracts to the producers even though they never delivered grain against that contract. And when you say in 05 it had to be put into a contingency fund and not return to the producers that actually contracted grain and put into the pools. I have trouble with that because you made a precedent in 02. And I guess that brings to the next point on fixed price contracts. For several years, the Alberta winter wheat producers have been working with the board to deal with the negative basis that we have on winter wheat. And for the last previous years, we've been told it's a quality issue. And finally this year, talking with people farther up in the board, they say, no, it's not a quality issue. It's to protect the pool prices because they want every bushel of grain going into the boat to be the same price. And I said to my dad, if I dealt with another business that changed their stories like that, I wouldn't deal with them in the future. How? And it's like Steve said, you phone them, you talk to different people, you get different stories. How, as producers, are we supposed to believe anything we hear when we get different stories? The rules change partway through a program. They change year to year without proper notification. Thank you.
The fixed price contract has been a work in progress. It's something that the board is learning to operate, and it was set up initially to not protect the pool, but to operate in a way that it didn't disadvantage the pool accounts. And It does use a pooled basis, however, and that does seem to disadvantage people out here. That is one of the reasons why the daily price contract was brought out as a pilot, because it's not a pooled basis, it's a fixed basis, and that is why we've combined it with the producer direct sale to keep that margin really close, so that if you saw a, a, a possibility in the U.S. And to be fair, you'd have to go back and get your decision made to whether you'd enter into a fixed price contract about harvest time. There's no doubt about that. You'd have to make that decision and choose to put a piece in. But that still allows you that if you see that basis in the U.S. Not favorable to you, that the CWB offers, you get the chance to go to the U.S. and capture any premium you can find.
Sorry.
Getting back to the hedging gains that you referred to earlier, it was a totally different situation. In that instance, producers held an in-the-money contract. And they would have had the option to sell that to their neighbors. There's no question about it, because prices had gone in a way that producers had a high-quality contract that was worth money, and if I had one and got frozen out, I should give it to you or sell it to you for some kind of value, and you could capture that. And you're right, Alex, it was a precedence that I wasn't that tickled with. It wasn't quite the right thing to do. It sent the wrong signal to the market. But producers still had a negotiable piece of paper here that was in the money. And that was why I supported paying that back to producers that had quality loss.
Okay.